Can Talk Radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon.
Good morning. Gravelly voice, you can tell it's morning. Good morning. It's Wednesday and time for Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM from the top of Burnaby Mountain, where we are on the unceded ancestral territories of the Hulkmeenam and Squamish speaking people. I am the gravelly throated Robin this morning and your sole host, which feels a little odd, to be honest. It feels a little bit strange to be all by myself in the studio after having at least one contributor and co-host over the past little while. In today's show, however, we will hear Rebecca's voice. She is not an intern with us any longer. Although we're crossing our fingers that she'll be back in a month or so if they don't find another internship for her at another place. But we'll hear an interview that she did last week with one of the staff people from the SVSPO, which is the Sexual Violence and Prevention Office here at SFU. They've got I'm going to call it a campaign that runs every January called SAM, Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And they've got quite a few events happening. One of them is this afternoon at 12:30 here on campus, as well as on Zoom. Folks will be watching a movie and then having some question and answer sort of discussion afterwards. The movie itself is called Nevertheless, and it speaks to unpacking workplace gender inequality, because the theme for this month, this year, is empowering equitable workspaces. And so we'll hear, as I said, an interview that Rebecca did with Belinda from the SVSPO in regards to the event and the month itself, and then I'll come back and share a little bit more from their website in terms of why this theme, I guess, and maybe try to wrap up some dots. Before we get right into that, though, let's start with a little bit of music. If you have listened to me on the radio ever before and heard me rave about the sun, complain about the rain, then this song will probably make a lot of sense to you. I'm thrilled to see the sunlight. Always. And this is called Dance with the Sun. Tamar Elana and the Ventanas here on Intravenous. All right. Tamar, Ilana, and the Ventanas with Dance with the Sun, starting us off with a little music there. As I mentioned, we're going to have a listen to the interview that Rebecca did last week with Belinda, staff of the SVSPO. This is a little over half an hour, and so it'll take us just over the half hour mark of the show, and I'll be back with you.
Welcome, everybody. I am Rebecca, the public affairs intern here at CJSF 90.1 FM campus and community radio station from Simon Fraser University. And I conducted an interview with Belinda Carson, who is from the Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office here on the Burnaby campus at SFU. And we were discussing the Sexual Assault Awareness Month that we are currently in and the keynote event that is coming up on January 22nd, which is going to talk a bit about unpacking workplace gender inequity. And I would just like to first off start by acknowledging that we are on ancestral and unceded homelands of the Haukamalum and Squamish-speaking peoples. So to, I guess, start this off, do you want to just tell everyone a bit about yourself, how you got involved with the SVSPO, and like what your role is?
Sure, yeah, I can introduce myself. So my name is Belinda Carson. My pronouns are she and her. And I am the educational specialist with SFU's Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office. So in our office, we have two folks who cover the education portfolio. So that's, you know, workshops, awareness type campaigns, anything that falls under this very like broad and comprehensive label of education. So I work closely with my colleague Paola, and my role focuses on specifically education, training, and awareness for SFU employees. So that includes, you know, faculty, staff, but any students who are also, you know, employees of SFU. So we work closely together to coordinate, you know, the student educational programming with that for employees as well. And then I've been at SFU and the SVSPO for almost 5 years. Before that, I worked at the University of the Fraser Valley in different forms of student programming that then I gradually kind of stepped more and more, like more and more and more and more into the sexualized violence prevention kind of realm, which is connected to my graduate work.
Oh, wow. It's so much more intricate. It seems like I can imagine with the SVSPO, from what I've read about the Sexual Assault Awareness Month that we're in at the moment, it's quite a collaborative organization.
Yes, yeah. So I think, you know, we're a relatively small team. Right now we are 4 people. So, I mean, one, just the size of our team necessitates collaboration and like actual collaboration with multiple like units and groups and individuals, you know, on campus and also within community, but also just the nature of this topic and this issue of like sexualized violence, which is like huge and complex. We can't do this work alone. The only way to even address it is through collaboration. And so that's sort of, I'd say, one of the fundamental principles for how we do our work, because I think that's the only way any sort of culture, like really systemic and cultural change can be made.
I completely agree. I think not just in sexual violence, but I think in almost any area that you want change, you're gonna have to have collaboration with people. You can never just do it one singular kind of entity.
Exactly. And several years ago, I learned about this distinction between coordination and collaboration. And so I think of collaboration as a deeper relationship versus, you know, the SVSPO, like, okay, we're going to plan and do the things. And we want, it's almost, coordination is more just like delegating it to other people. But we really want this to be, like we use the term co-creation a lot. Because I think in terms of both support and education, we really need to have a deep understanding of the issues and the needs and the best ways to bring people in and to engage with different individuals and like populations. And so we need to have those very like deep and reciprocal relationships with, you know, the various partners that we work with.
Yes, absolutely. So since you've been at the SVSPO for around about 5 years now, what would you say has been your like most rewarding experience being involved in this organization?
Oh,
I know I love to put this question in on people because it gets them to really think and they're like, oh God, picking just one.
Yeah, that's exactly my response. You know, there's not a single event or workshop or meeting or anything or interaction that I've had where I'm like, yeah, that's it.
Mm.
But actually this happens frequently where it's like, in speaking of collaboration, sometimes it happens in workshops where, you know, there's participants in that, like I do a lot of in-person and virtual workshops where there are participants where they're just very engaged and like asking some really thoughtful questions and there's really good discussion. And in that moment, I'm like, yes, this is why I keep doing this hard work, because there are other people like me who are committed to it, or they're curious and they want to learn more. There are people who are really dedicated to similar values. So sometimes it happens in a workshop. Sometimes it happens, you know, in, for example, Sexual Assault Awareness Month, we have an advisory committee that helps sort of conceptualize SAM each year and advises on communications and programming. And those are the people who are also, they're really engaged in it. So I find that very energizing. And it's those moments where we're in it and there's this like synergy happening. And those are the things, those are always the highlights for me. And then sometimes too, in those more private conversations, when often it's a conversation, sometimes it's an email where someone tells us about the positive impact something we did or said, or just the fact that we exist, like as an office, when they tell me those are the highlights for me.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of that, do you want to just speak on how people, students, community members can reach and find the SVSPO?
Sure. Yeah. There's lots of different ways. We try to be really flexible and offer different ways to connect with us, because we recognize that not one single, you know, entry point or path works for everybody. I might say if anyone wants to initially, most people go to a website first. So I would say if you're on the SFU website, the easiest way to find us is just in the search bar to search like sexualized violence, and we'll be like the top, you know, in the search terms. So if you go, a person can go to our website if they want to find out more about who we are, what we do, and the different ways to connect with us, whether it's for, you know, scheduling a workshop or getting support. In terms of if someone does want support, there's so many ways. They can email us, they can drop by, you know, for in-person. We do virtual drop-in sessions Monday to Thursday at set times. So a person can just drop into that Zoom or be let into the Zoom meeting and to meet with a case manager. And we always like to highlight for those ones, a person can remain completely anonymous. They don't even need to turn their camera on. And then sometimes, you know, people will have an email correspondence back and forth or texting back and forth, because that is what is most accessible and most comfortable for the person who is seeking support. So I would always just say, like, start with our website, go to the contact us page, and that outlines all the different options for connecting with the SVSPO.
I think that's so important as well, that there is like a multitude of different ways that you can get in contact, because it's important for people to know. I think one thing that definitely hinders people reaching out for support is them being uncomfortable in potentially how they can get that support and not knowing how to. And the fact that you guys have such a range of ways that people can get involved, that people can pick and choose how they want to get their support.
Exactly.
With it being Sexual Assault Awareness Month this month, I personally have never actually heard of Sexual Assault Awareness Month until I was at the station a couple of weeks ago. So could you tell me and anyone else that maybe doesn't know, what is the purpose of Sexual Assault Awareness Month?
Sure, of course. So just a little context. So Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we call it SAM. Mm-hmm. It's actually an annual campaign, I guess, awareness campaign that is recognized within definitely North America. And usually it's in April. So here at SFU and some other post-secondary institutions, we recognize SAM in January because you don't want to do a big campaign in April when faculty and students are in exam period.
Yeah.
So at SFU, SAM takes place every January. It's a month-long campaign that consists of, you know, a communications and awareness campaign, but also a series of events and activities. And the purpose of it is to, I'd say, twofold. One is to generate awareness of, you know, the issue and all of the issues, because this is the thing we try to highlight. This is a complex and multifaceted issue that, you know, earlier on you were talking about intersections, that intersects with so many other, you know, social issues. So one is to raise awareness and to facilitate sort of discussion and conversations. But then also we always try to find ways, like create opportunities for people to action, right? You know, awareness is important, and often it's an important starting place, and that awareness has to keep going, but it has to be coupled with action. So for SAM, you know, it's a campaign that's designed to engage all SFU community members. So it's not just for students, it's for faculty, like all employees as well. And what we try to do, you know, is to generate awareness, right? Generate those conversations, offer people opportunities to take action. But then to do that in a way that recognizes that people are coming to, you know, you talked about, I've never heard about SAM before. Mm. There are so many other people who haven't, or they're new to this topic at all. And so we really try to ladder some of the things so that regardless of where you are in this sort of learning journey, you can think of, there's an entry point, just like how, you know, we talked about with people connecting to the SVSPO. Let's find an entry point that feels right for a particular individual. So it could be something super low key, like, I don't know, we do an outreach table or something like that. And then there's maybe more in-depth, like our keynote that I know we're going to talk about, goes a little bit deeper into, you know, one of the components of this for people who are already like, I'm already doing research in this, or I'm already a student activist. Yeah, so we try to like create different entry points, you know, where depending upon where people are and how deeply they're already engaged in this topic.
Wow, it's an interesting way of, I'd say structuring it. I've not actually ever really heard of an organization that does something like that, where you have different entry points depending where people are. And I love how you put it, learning journey, to get involved with SAM, because I'm from England, and at my university, I'm pretty sure for the 2 years I've been there, we haven't really had anything like this. I mean, the most I have is my courses, but there's very few, I guess, events or anything, like speeches and things regarding topics. And it's one thing I've noted. So I've been here since August, and I don't know if it's maybe because I'm part of the radio and we obviously do promotional content for things at the university, but you have a lot more sort of events and I guess like keynote speeches and things going on. as a university community, but it's not just for students, it's for faculty, for staff as well. A lot more than what I see at my university back home, which is quite interesting. Why do you think it's important that we be holding these conversations specifically in post-secondary institutions regarding like sexual assault awareness?
Well, there are so many reasons why it's important. I think firstly, it's important to have these conversations, period, because so many of the behaviors, and I'll say the systems that underpin or facilitate these behaviors are normalized. So we need to surface things and talk about them so that we can begin to or continue dismantling some of these systems and denormalizing a lot of behaviors that are still like tolerated, let's say. I think specifically in the post-secondary environment, because, you know, the post-secondary isn't a bubble. Like, this is a very international societal problem. And so post-secondary institutions, they're not more or less affected, I'd say, by this like really broad problem. So we're not immune from it. We're not a little bubble community. And I don't know, I think of post, like, this is one of the places where we have so many, you know, students, young people. It's a really critical time in a lot of people's lives, regardless of their age of when they go to post-secondary. This is an environment that, my perspective of post-secondary is an environment that, like, this is where we have these conversations, right? This is one of, I think, the purposes of post-secondary is to have this idea exchange and discussion, and how can we change things for the better. So I think this is one of the ideal environments in which to have these conversations, to do this type of work. And also, there's just so many perspectives. Like, it's a community, but I think it's amazing that we have students who, you know, are taking courses and learning about this. We have students who are activists already, students who are research, like, we have researchers, whether they're undergrad, graduate, or faculty, who have like really deep knowledge of particular components. So that collaboration that we talked about, like, our people are already here. We're already part of the same community.
Definitely. I know we spoke about this a bit with Xylo on previous episodes of Intravenous, but also the fact that at post-secondary institutions, that is a lot of where relationships are starting to form. People are getting to know each other in a more romantic way, and the idea of consent and learning what consent means leads very much into this and teaching, like, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, how do you know, how can you support each other. It's, you need that kind of, I don't want to word it as like training, but like, you need that kind of, I guess, services and education as you're starting to go into it, rather than waiting 20 years and then doing it later.
Yeah. And I would say, I think even if these conversations, I think it's very important and valuable that post-secondary institutions, especially, I mean, you talked about your school in England, but I can speak for North America, are very active on this. And at the same time, it needs to happen even earlier, right? Mm. This needs to happen in the K-12 system. It is happening kind of in a patchwork style. So yes, post-secondary is very important for those reasons that you identified, and it needs to happen earlier, and it needs to continue on.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a lifetime of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like, we don't have much of these conversations in post-secondary institutions in England. It's there, just not very prominent, I would say. And I also think one pitfall that England has is, I don't know what it's like over here in terms of same-sex schools, like high schools. But in England, it's very common to be kind of segregated into same-sex schools when you are from like 11 to 16. Mm-hmm. And I think when you start to have education in that area towards like sexual education stuff, it shouldn't be a segregated topic at all. I think that really is a pitfall where we have it, because it's very limiting. And when you then go from 16 to 18 back into kind of mixed sex schools, I remember having conversations with some of my guy friends about what they were taught, and it was very different to what we were taught. And you're not taught about the other side. You're just taught about your side. And I think that's a very isolating way of looking at it.
Yeah. And it's also super binary.
Yeah.
Right? It's hinged upon this binary conception of gender. And yeah, I think, I mean, we don't specialize in like sexual health education, but I know for that, the best practice is, you know, inclusive education, where you're not separating people out based on, you know, different gender identities, because that's the thing. We all need to have a common understanding of all of these various things, of consent, of the biology of sex, of, you know, intimacy. Like you said, if this group has this particular information, this group has other information that's only directly related to them. Like, I think one of the fundamental things that all of this work comes down to is the cultivation of empathy for other people. And I think if we can cultivate empathy, then it's harder to not value consent, for example. And so by setting it up that way, we're limiting people's potential to understand, right? Their future partners and other people who are maybe not the same gender as them, to understand those people's perspectives and what they need. We need that exchange, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that I agree with you. I think that's so, so valuable and important. And I hope the separating out of people and sharing, oh, this, you don't need to know this. It's not, you know, relevant to you. Yeah, it is relevant. I hope that continues to change.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of moving more towards, you briefly mentioned the keynote event that's happening January 22nd, I believe.